London Calling. David here. I've got Steve Fallon with me. We're going to talk turkey today. We're talking about turkey. Steve's going to be doing in a few days a virtual tour to Turkey. So, hello, Steve. Are you there?
Hi, David. Hi, hi.
Yeah, good stuff.
Or merhaba, as you say in Turkish.
Okay. Oh, so you speak Turkish?
I do, yes, I do.
Very good. So, why Turkey? What about this one, then? Tell us a little bit about it. What's up?
Well, the inspiration is that my husband and I own a house in Turkey. We bought a house in 2002 in a little sea coastal village at the time called Kalkan. It's still not metropolis, but it's a lot bigger with a lot more villas than it used to have. But we bought it for a song. We spent several years fixing it up, and we ended up owning a beautiful four-bedroom house overlooking the Mediterranean. But it just so happens, one of the reasons why the area really caught my imagination is, I mean, there are all sorts of reasons to go to this area of Turkey. This is called the Turquoise Coast. So the name of my talk is actually Turkey's Turquoise Coast, Meanders Both Ancient and Sacred. Now, by a way of aside, I use the word meander there because the Meander River is actually in Turkey. That's where the word comes from. It has this incredibly convoluted route south of Izmir, and it's called the Meander, so I thought I'd throw that in there. But the area that this is in, Turquoise Coast, is absolutely stunning. It's probably one of the most beautiful parts of Turkey. It has Turkey's longest beach at Patara, which is about 20 kilometers or 12 miles. Beautiful, beautiful little towns like Kalkan and neighboring Kash. It has some of the best restaurants in Turkey outside of Istanbul. And Turkey's first long-distance hiking route, the Lycian Way, 500 kilometers. But probably the main magnet beyond, you know, its physical beauty is that this area boasts the largest collection of ancient ruins in Turkey. It's just amazing. It's a bump of land between Fethiye, close to where a lot of the flights come in, at Dalaman, and between Fethiye and Antalya, which is about 350 kilometers, there is an absolute embarrassment of ancient ruins. But they're not Greek and they're not Roman, they're Lycian. And Lycia was an independent culture, society, that thrived pretty much from about 1200 BC to about the 4th century AD. So we're looking at about 1500 years. You couldn't exactly call it a footnote because 1,500 years is 1,500 years. But very little is known about this culture as much as, say, we know about Greece or Rome or even the Luddites. In fact, they may have actually descended from the Luddites in the 12th century BC, but it's not sure. The first mention they get is in Homer's Iliad in the 8th century. But what they left behind, the legacy that's really important, they left two things behind. Well, one actually material, and then something else that has changed the course of history. In 143 AD, Lycia was independent for a relatively short time, and they set up something called the Lycian League, which is the first kind of known democratic union of city-states in history. And it actually influenced many, many people, everyone from the French intellectuals like Montesquieu to the drafters of the American Constitution, who actually mentioned it in their writings. And secondly, although the Lycians left behind little in material culture, in fact, we still haven't completely 100% decoded the language, partially there, but not all the way, they have left a huge array of funerary monuments, tombs, sarcophagi, graves, that you just can't believe how many are left behind. And there are about four or five different types, which I'll walk us through. And then we'll look at some of the main sites that you can see in this area.
I'm just astonished. I mean, this has been, 6 minutes? And it's just been an education for me. Yeah. I knew none of this.
Goodness gracious. How often do you go to Turkey?
Well, in normal times, you know, away from COVID and quarantine, we go, you know, maybe 3-4 times a year. And in fact, we were booked to go on the 22nd of May for 3 weeks. I was very much looking forward to it. But our flight was just canceled 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
EasyJet canceled out its flights, so.
And, Steve, have you written about it for one of the guidebooks?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, of course. I've done that section of the Turkey Guide twice, which we call Antalya and the Turquoise Coast or something like that. And I've covered all the ruins and so forth and so on. I know them anyway because, I mean, I live there. But I also do something, this is very American, but I do something, there's a box story of a page called Lycia 101. So it basically explains, you know, who, what, when, where, how of Lycia. Because most people don't really know what it is. I mean, they don't know it at all. But when they see the monuments, they're absolutely astonished. The kind of signature monument, and this talk is very much image-driven because I have about 70 slides of my own, and they're all pretty cool. I mean, including, you know, Kekova, the sunken city, where there are actually a city is actually submerged under the water, and popping up are these Gothic-shaped sarcophagi, you know, out of the water. I mean, just truly amazing. And amphitheaters that are just beautiful. I mean, the one at Patara, which is where the longest beach is phenomenal.
Now that you mentioned, is it pronounced Antalya?
Antalya is the city. Anatolia is the Anatolia is Asian Turkey. Thrace is European Turkey. And Anatolia is Asian Turkey. But the city that I mentioned is called Antalya, and that's the third or the fourth largest city in Turkey.
So this part that you're concentrating on, it's in that Anatolia part of Turkey. Is that correct?
It is. It's in Anatolia, and it's on what's called the Tepe Peninsula, T-E-P-E, Tepe Peninsula. And it's not a huge area. I mean, you know, if you drove from Fethiye to Antalya along the coastal road, it would be about 220, 230 kilometers, something like that. But the amount of the riches of ruins that are contained within this small area is just mind-boggling, just mind-boggling. It's a very complicated story, though, because, you know, I like to say that, when you try to actually summarize the history of Lycia, it gets a little bit complicated because, you know, it was ruled by the Persians under Cyrus. It was then ruled by Ptolemy under, then Alexander stepped in. Then the Romans came, you know, back and forth and forth. I say, you know, the garden Lycia changed over the millenniums, you know, as regularly as today's change at the Buckingham Palace. You know, it's just never ends. But they did eventually enjoy a relatively brief period of independence, in which they did set up these independent city states. There were 23 of them. Six of them were the main ones, and they had 3 votes each. The middle level had 2 votes each, and the last ones had 1 vote each. So there were a half dozen that were the most important ones, like Patara, for example. And you could feel it. You could feel it when you see them. They're grand sites, with you know, huge amphitheaters, bulletarions, which are like city halls, you know, wonderful necropolises. And the most amazing tombs, you've just got to see them to believe them. The cliff tombs, for example, look like a honeycomb way up on the mountains with tiny, tiny little cubby holes up and down, and you just wonder, why did they do that and how did they do that? It's just amazing.
Well, I will be seeing them. You have so whetted my appetite. What about the people who are there today? Do they have a strong sense of an appreciation of the history there, their history, their identity?
I think they do. I mean, I was just speaking to someone who will be appearing on the talk, my friend Omar Yapish, who runs a travel agency there, and he does a lot of groups on the Lycian Trail. He takes a lot of hikers for trips of 7 to 10 days. And we were talking about it. He was enthusing about his favorite sites and why and all that kind of thing. But most people, well, I guess you could say on the one hand, it's like anywhere else. When you grow up with these things around you, it just feels like normal, if you know what I mean. You know, there's a you know, 3,500 seat amphitheater around the corner that dates from the second century AD kind of thing. On the other hand, yes, people know Lycia, and they, you know, it's very, very important for tourism, so they respect it, and the monuments are very well kept. What is really, really, really fun, though, is you do have to actually pay to enter most of the sites now. It's a pittance, a real pittance. But until about 10 years ago, a lot of them were unmanned. I mean, you literally just walked to them. It's nothing like going to the Parthenon in Athens or anything of ancient sites in Italy or anything like that. It really, I mean, you have a sense of history. You just do, because you're often on your own in these incredible sites, and you just can't believe that you're just feeling and sensing these things. And there's so many discoveries to be made too, because all of a sudden you look down and you'll see a relief that you never noticed before. Mm-hmm. You know, just amazing stuff, amazing stuff.
Steve, you've done it again. You're going to have a guest star on this. I mean, you're setting such an impossibly high bar for the rest of this. I mean, you did this with the Bayeux Tapestry. You did it with the Mayflower, and now lo and behold, he's going to be in Turkey. Is that right? But
he's going to be in Turkey. Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, because I really felt, although I have walked sections of the Lycian way. You know, I'm no expert, and I thought, I mean, you know, if people want to go there, surely they will want to do at least a small section, because the easiest way to get from a couple of the main sites is simply to stroll along the Lycian Way.
Yeah.
It's not a difficult hiking path. There are some areas that are a little bit steep, but I mean, as he said, any age could do it. He had a group of 75-year-olds, you know, about a month ago from Ukraine, of all places. And he said they were just fine. They could, you know, could have no problems whatsoever doing it. So it is a very convenient way of linking some of the sites that are close together.
I mean, this just sounds ideal for, say, somebody who's, you know, who knows the Mediterranean, loves the Mediterranean, has maybe been to Spain and France and Greece and Italy, and has perhaps never been to Turkey, and would like to venture a little further afield than Spain or France.
Really is. This area is, I mean, you know, even I, you know, who have traveled quite a bit and I have a house there, every once in a while you just turn the corner driving between, say, Kalkan, which is where we live, to the next small town, I guess you'd call it, called Kash, K-A-S, with a cedilla. And just the drive along the water, I mean, it literally feels like you're driving on the water. It's just, you're going down this quite steep hill on the highway, and just the water all around you, and it's, you know, it's that azure blue. It's just beautiful. And very interestingly, and we will see this on the tour, Greece's closest island to Turkey is off the coast. And as you're going along that road between Kalkin and Kash, what do you see? But all of a sudden your phone bleeps and you're on the Greek network, because Greece is literally about 4 kilometers off to sea. And you can do a day trip there. But it's the most amazing thing, because, you know, you feel like you've just arrived in central casting. You leave Turkey behind, which has a certain type of sights and scents and smells and so forth, scents and sounds, and you go into Greece, and it's white and blue, and guys are walking around carrying bouzoukis. Like, you just, like, wow.
I love it.
I entered a film set, you know.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Steve, what about the cuisine? And will you be saying anything about that, or can you say anything now about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's excellent. It's a funny thing, though, because this is a relatively well-heeled area of Turkey. I mean, the kind of tourists it attracts tend to be a kind of families and kind of, you know, people from the UK, France, fewer Americans, of course, in Turkey, but Europeans who have a couple of more lira in their pockets. So there are superb restaurants. I mean, some of them, they vie with the ones in Istanbul. If you want earthy, everyday street food, There's lots of that too in the markets and everything else. But generally, restaurants are of a certain standard in these towns.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very good. Very, very good food. And good service. I mean, excellent service because they are dealing a lot with foreigners.
But am I right in guessing that it's pretty affordable for us Westerners? And these aren't sort of Venice or Rome prices. Is that right? Or
well, yeah, and I hate to say it because one hates to sort of take advantage of other's misfortunes. But I mean, the thing is, the exchange rate is just. I mean, the lira has just bombed, and you know when the lira was. Not into hyperinflation, but for a time, but 20 years ago, they were counting in millions. Mm-hmm. They then introduced the so-called new lira, and the exchange rate at the time was 2.5 to the pound. That was mm-hmm. introduced in like 2002. It's now 11.
Mm-hmm.
So although prices have caught up to a certain degree, it's still not an expensive destination for people. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lot of mileage for your pound, that's for sure, or your mm-hmm. dollar. More than other places. And the thing is, I mean, I can't say it enough that this area of Turkey is so great because it kind of has everything. It has, you know, it has the beautiful beaches. It has the incredible water sports. It has, lovely towns and resorts. It has great restaurants, but it also has the ancient ruins. So, you know, not everyone likes to sit on a beach all day. So, mm-hmm. you know, one person can do all the history stuff and the other person can just relax. Or go sea kayaking or whatever they want to do, horse riding. You know, there's so many things to do there.
Well, what you've just said is music to my personal ears. I mean, yeah, I'm interested in and I like ruins, but the ratio of ruins to beach holiday for me, it's maybe one out of every 4 days. You know, I want to sit on a beach and reread War and Peace or something like that.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the thing is, they're all there, too, and they're all so close. I mean, when you do see this, Patara, which, I repeat, has the longest beach in Turkey and is absolutely beautiful with dunes and everything, just on the other side of those dunes is one of the six major Lycian towns.
Mm-hmm.
And not only, I mean, because I call it Meand is both ancient and sacred. I call it that because there's some very, very, very strong connections here beyond just, you know, the ancient Lycians. For example, Patara was the major port. Xanthos was the capital, and Patara was the major port. Mm-hmm. And according to Acts, if you look at your New Testament, according to Acts 21, chapters 1 and 2, Saints Paul and Luke changed boats here while on their way to their third mission from Miletus. And it actually says they changed boats at Patara.
Gosh, yeah.
The same thing happened in Myra. It's mentioned in the New Testament. And Myra was the birthplace of St. Nicholas, who just happens to be Santa Claus.
Wow, that's wonderful. And what about climate and, which the best months of the year to go there for a visit?
Yeah, the best months to go, really, if you want beautiful, beautiful, beautiful sunlight, but not too, too hot, is, say, between mid to late March to May, when it's in spring. And it is stunning. And it's the perfect time to walk. And the hillsides are covered in these tiny little bulb flowers. You know, bulb flowers originated, like tulips and so forth. They all originated in Turkey. So mm-hmm. the hills are just awash with these things. It's mm-hmm. also wonderful to go in, say, late September into November, because mm-hmm. it's still very warm, and you can still go to the beach, but you could also still walk comfortably. Mm-hmm. The problem with the second one is you sometimes can risk getting rain in November.
Oh dear, you sometimes risk getting rain. Yeah. You're talking to a guy who lives in England.
Yeah, but don't forget, when it rains, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not
Here it's just, you know, a succession of damp days. There, like it does, it's not the tropics, obviously.
Yeah.
But like
in
the tropics, when it comes down, it comes down. So,
No
messing about, no messing about.
Two other quick practical questions. Do they have good Wi-Fi there, first of all?
Oh yeah. In fact, I'll be doing some of my broadcasts from there. So yeah. Excellent Wi-Fi. It's one of those sort of countries that went from like smoke signals to the internet. You know what I mean?
And
like every kid under the age of 16, when we, anytime we've ever had any problems, we call up Omer or something, and he comes up, and he's about 16 years old, and he clucks his thick tongue and says, "Oh, you guys again." And he sorts it all out in 2 seconds flat. You know, oh, God, here I go again.
Yeah.
Good Wi-Fi. Yeah, very good, very good. And it's available everywhere, you know, in cafes and bars and stuff like that.
And, you know, what's the COVID situation there?
Well, this is the thing, not good right now. I mean, the numbers are high. I mean, they're beginning to do some major vaccinations, but it's they had some of the strictest rules in the world. So it's heartbreaking that, you know, people who abided by this these rules, you know, have to suffer. I mean, people over 65 were basically confined to their homes for like, you know, month after month after month. But, you know, because tourism is so important in Turkey, they actually exempted tourists for a long time for any of these rules. So I don't know if that's such a good thing, but certainly it doesn't look good.
So it looks like if Mary and I are personally going to go, we might be looking at the time of the year when we run a risk of some rain. In other words, late September, because we're into May already. That's probably not going to turn around in the next 3 weeks or so.
No, the rain really was more of a concern, sort of like in November. September and October, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
In fact, in September, sometimes it's too hot. I mean, September, it feels like almost like August or even July sometimes. I mean,
you're
still at the beach. I could tell you, there's a lot of expats living there, both full-time and part-time like us. We form walking clubs, and the serious walking doesn't really begin until sort of late October, November into December. Then in the new year, you're almost bound to get a fair amount of rain in January, February. It can be a little bit dangerous sometimes because the land gets the slopes get very slippery and everything else. But that's the best time for like really, really comfortable, easy walking. And also in the spring too.
Steve, if you're flying from, say, London to this part of Turkey, where do you fly into? What's the
You have two choices. To get to our most convenient airport is called Dalaman. It's just outside of Fethiye, which is Fethiye, Fethiye. And Dalaman, it's a huge, huge hub. EasyJet flies there, Turkish Airlines flies there, British Airways fly there. You can get to there during the season. You know, there are multiple daily flights from all these airlines. When in the wintertime, it's more difficult. In the dead of winter, you often have to change, make a quick change in Istanbul and then fly to Dalaman that way. Mm-hmm. Or you could fly to Antalya. But we're that much further away from Antalya. But there are two options.
I understand. Yeah. When are you actually doing this talk then? It's on Tuesday, is that right?
I've got two booked. I've got one on Wednesday the 5th. And then at 7 o'clock, British summer time, and one on Sunday, the 16th of May.
Okay, well, I think you should then, hope I can talk you into putting another one on a little bit further on into the summer.
To be perfectly honest, I slotted only two because we were planning to go on the 22nd, and I still hadn't decided how much time I wanted holiday because I haven't taken any time off in like a year, and I just but now it's not going to happen. So.
yeah, sure.
What a drag.
Yeah. Okay, well, this is great. You have so whetted my appetite. One, to go on the virtual tour, and two, to go back to Turkey. I mean, I think I've been 5 times, but I definitely want to go to this place.
But if you have any questions at all, just ask me, because I've worked on 5 editions of the book, so I've done, if you trace Turkey, I've done every single coastline in Turkey, which is kind of odd when you think about it. I haven't done the Far East, but then, you know, that's difficult to get to in pretty rough travel.
You said something in Turkish to get us going, to greet us, so how about a parting sentence in Turkish, Steve, to end this little podcast.
Good as it is, teşekkür ederim. See you later, and thank you very much.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks very much, Steve.
Okay.
Talk to you later. That's great. Yeah, that's great.